3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. I had a dream that I was in prison. I had a dream that I was in prison and I ran with a gang of poets. And all the other gangs were afraid to say our names, would do everything they could to maintain their distance, although resistance was futile. And they would kill each other and assault each other, but considered our truths too hostile. They didn't want us to take away the cartons of low self-esteem that society gave them, because that was all they had. And when they saw us walking down the block, they would dip in their cells. They'd rather dwell in that hell than face the heaven that we were speaking. They would rather see a fellow inmate's blood leaking than have us reach into their heart. Even though all we ever said was that we loved them and wanted to save them, but every jewel we gave them just made them fear us more. And in the mess hall, they would rather gang war than sit at our table, even though we carved right in it that none of us were better and we were all up in this hell together. And what was most important is that we posed a united front in front of the COs and the warden. And although the poets might have known a little bit more about our oppression, we were all caught in the belly of the beast. But then I noticed that the ones who listened were the other poets and the ones who needed to hear us the least. So we started flying these kites called heat. And we told them each one teach one and each one reach one, because the place where we're from is the place where God lives. So they started a rumor that the poets had the mark of the Most High on our eyelids. And poets started buying into it and getting all egotistical and believing that they were better than the other convicts. So I took it for as long as I could, and then I stood in the middle of the cell block and I yelled out, "Whenever I write, I try to make sure that I give insight and vision." And I looked around and noticed that the ones who needed to hear me the most wouldn't listen. The ones who needed to hear me the most could not listen. It was like the ones who needed to hear me the most didn't listen. And that's when I woke up this morning and realized that I actually do live in that very prison.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
From historic Monticello, the home of Thomas Jefferson near Charlottesville, Virginia, the Mutual Broadcasting System is about to bring you an Independence Day address by the President of the United States. The Chief Executive will be introduced by Mr. Frank K. Houston, President of the Jefferson Memorial Foundation. Mr. Houston.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. Tuck, Mr. Houston, distinguished guests, and fellow countrymen. I certainly appreciate that warm welcome extended to me by the governor of Virginia, most highly. And I appreciate the courtesies which have been extended to me since I have been here. Virginia is always courteous to her guests. It is fitting that we should come to Monticello to celebrate the anniversary of our independence. Here lived Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence. Here Thomas Jefferson died on July 4th, 1826, 50 years from the day the Declaration was adopted by the Continental Congress and proclaimed to the world. The Declaration of Independence was an expression of democratic philosophy that sustained American patriots during the Revolution and has ever since inspired men to fight to the death for their unalienable rights. The standard phrase used by writers of Jefferson's day to describe man's essential rights was life, liberty, and property. But to Jefferson, human rights were more important than property rights. And the phrase, as he wrote it in the Declaration of Independence, became life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The laws and the traditions of the colonies in 1776 were designed to support a monarchical system rather than a democratic society. To Jefferson, the American Revolution was far more than a struggle for independence. It was a struggle for democracy. Within a few weeks after independence had been proclaimed at Philadelphia, Jefferson resigned his seat in the Continental Congress and returned to his place in the Virginia legislature. There he began his monumental work of laying the foundation of an independent democracy. Within a few years, the Virginia legislature, under Jefferson's leadership, instituted full religious freedom, abolished the laws which had permitted great estates to pass undivided from generation to generation, prohibited the importation of slaves, revised the civil and criminal code of laws, and established a general system of public education. These acts, according to Jefferson, eradicated every fiber of the ancient and future aristocracy. These acts formed the basis for a truly democratic government. Jefferson knew it was necessary to provide in law the requisites for the survival of an independent democracy. He knew that it was not enough merely to set forth a Declaration of Independence. 2 years ago, the United States and 50 other nations joined in signing a great Declaration of Interdependence known as the Charter of the United Nations. We did so because we had learned at staggering cost that the nations of the world cannot live in peace and prosperity if at the same time they try to live in isolation. We have learned that nations are interdependent and that recognition of our dependence upon one another is essential to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness of all mankind. It is now the duty of all nations to converge their policies toward common goals of peace. Of course, we cannot expect all nations with different histories, institutions, and economic conditions to agree at once upon common ideals and policies. But it is not too much to expect that all nations should create, each within its own borders, the requisites for the growth of worldwide harmony. The first requisite of peace among nations is common adherence to the principle that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed.
Authorities say a California woman was resisting arrest, but did she deserve this?
Arrested!
Stop.
Oh, shit.
Oh, is beating her up, yo.
Oh my gosh, why?
Just blow after blow caught on camera. And now the California trooper you see here is off the street on administrative leave while his actions are under investigation. CNN's Sarah Seidner has the story.
Video from a California freeway shot by a driver stunned by what he was seeing unfold. A woman being punched over and over and over again by a California highway patrolman.
And you see it, you heard it. It was like thump, thump, thump. And then you hear her head bouncing, bam, bam, on the concrete.
How many times did he hit her?
Oh, I seen 11 on the video. He took more shots than that. I think it's around 15 shots to her head. And then
Punching.
Like, this is not just jabs. These are hooks. Those are lights out punches. Those aren't like taps.
The Highway Patrol report says the woman posed a danger to herself and other drivers because she was walking within traffic lanes at times. And when she was asked to stop, she continued ignoring the officer's command.
He's cuckooing, which cuckooing means monster in English.
That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
Indiana police officer who pushed a man over while he was in a wheelchair still has his job. This video has been released, and it is very disturbing. Officers asked this 25-year-old armed man to leave the scene at a nearby school. When he moved forward, he ran over that lieutenant's foot, and you see there the lieutenant pushed the wheelchair, caused the chair and the man to tip over. After an internal investigation, the department recommended firing the officer. A merit board disagreed. The weapon, by the way, that man in the wheelchair was holding was a pocket knife.
So he was armed and he wouldn't leave the area of the school?
Yes.
And the officer got mad because he rolled over his foot?
Yes.
Okay.
A, you are idiots. B, the guns are loaded. And C, care to try me?
Stand clear. Done, man, attack. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Watch out. We run New York. Policeman come. We bust him off the park. I know this for a fact. You don't like how I act. You claim I'm selling crack. But you be doing that. I got to say see ya. Cause I would never be ya. Be a officer. You're wicked overseer. You're hot shot. You wanna get pops and be a savior. First show a little respect. Change your behavior. Change your attitude. Change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen.
Police investigate a shoplifting case in Centralia that turned into a deadly officer-involved shooting. It started with a 43-year-old man stealing a burrito from the South Tower Street Mini Mart yesterday. When officers confronted him in a nearby parking lot, they say he became angry and pulled out a gun. That's when an officer shot the man at least once, killing him.
But there is never any justification for violence.
That's the sound of the police.
Out of that breaking news, a deputy involved shooting in downtown Seattle.
This happened at 5th and Lander in the Soto neighborhood. Tina Patel just on scene now. So Tina, what can you tell us?
Well, David, because this involved a deputy with the King County Sheriff's Office, they've actually handed over the investigation to Seattle Police. So we're waiting to hear from them to get more detailed information. But what we know is that the shooting happened over there by the light rail station. What an eyewitness is telling us is that the transit police and a sheriff's deputy was here. They were arguing with a man that they pulled off of that light rail. He may have been arguing about a skipped fare. We're not sure exactly what that argument was about, but they were trying to get that man into custody, trying to get handcuffs on him. Something happened. One of the sheriff's deputies ended up pulling out a gun, shooting the suspect, and we are told that that suspect is dead.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.
A Virginia family is demanding answers after officers shot and killed their teenage son this weekend.
Police in Percival say the family called them for help because the 17-year-old was suicidal. They say the teenager lunged at them with a knife. Sherry Lee spoke with the family in an interview you will see only on Fox 5. Sherry?
Well, Sean and Scott, Christian Sierra's family says he was suicidal and crying out for help, and that the police officer who responded was too quick to shoot and kill.
And I woke up this morning thinking that this was all a nightmare, and I went to his room, and he wasn't there.
Sandra Sierra knows in her mind, but not her heart, that her son Christian is dead.
On Saturday, she'd heard about the police shooting on Fraser Drive, but not that it was her 17-year-old until police showed up.
And I banged on their car and I'm like, you killed my kid. You guys killed my kid.
Christian was depressed, his family said, not violent. He was at a friend's house and became suicidal, so they called 911 for help. When Percival police arrived, he was armed with a knife.
A witness says Christian came around the corner, followed by a friend begging him to drop the knife. Christian had already harmed himself, and the witness heard him say, I don't want to live anymore. He collapsed on the ground, but then he got up and turned towards the officers, and that's when he was shot.
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops. You know, pow, 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 and he drops.
Check out the message in a rough styling. The real criminal on the COP. You check for undercover anyone DG. But just like me, a black man, they won't check me. They check out me, y'all, for it shine like the sun. But they're jealous and I'm next guy, they can't afford one. Black people still slaves up to today. But the black police officer, let's see it that way. He wants his salary, he wants it. So he put on a badge and kill people for it. My grandfather had a deal with the cops. My great grandfather dealt with the cops. My great grandfather had a deal with the cops. And then my great, 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 when it's gonna stop? Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound.
In Wisconsin have identified the second of two women found stuffed inside suitcases earlier this month. The second victim has been identified as Jenny Gomez of Oregon. Authorities were able to confirm the identity through dental records. The other woman was identified last week as Laura Simonson. She's from Minnesota. The suspect, Stephen Zelich, allegedly killed these women, then hid their bodies for months, and then in early June, he put their bodies in suitcases and then dumped it along a rural road in Wisconsin.
Jenny was not officially reported missing. That's what took a little while. She had told her family she was moving, and they thought perhaps she was on with her life.
The suspect is a former cop.
Out the way when I'm passing through. I got heads to the front and the back of you. I got the world in my hands, you can have it too. I got two middle fingers and they pointed at you. Move out the way when I'm passing through. I got heads to the front and the back of you. I got the world in my hands, you can have it too. I got two middle fingers and they pointed at you. I'm the Messiah, I'm anti-celebrity, I'm anti-war like John Lennon in the 70s. Dead to left the movement, you're the student. It's time to change the world, kid. Here's the blueprint. Something smells like teen spirit. Like Kurt Cobain's ghost came back and wrote these lyrics. Enforced America, listen. With a million angry misfits screaming through the system. Yeah. I'm the pain in Axl Rose's diary. That's why an appetite for destruction lives inside of me. I'm not your typical lyricist. Stripping naked and selling on appearances. This is for those who came to tackle giants. This is the anthem. I'm so sick of being cut up in your sideshow. I'm the anti-American teen idol. Move out the way when I'm passing through. I got heads to the front and the back of you. I got the world in my hands, you can have it too. I got two middle fingers and they pointed at you. Move out the way when I'm passing through. I got heads to the front and the back of you. I got the world in my hands, you can have it too. I got two middle fingers and they pointed at you. I spread peace through a pen like Bob Dylan. Then crash the set of pop stars while it's filming. Expose foes for lies and propaganda. Like dirty cops swinging batons on camera. Let's march up these steps and face the fire. Scratch a match and burn this empire down. So let the games begin. You either turn with the world or you watch it spin.
And if your dreams were stolen by a liar, then steal it back like your name was Winona Ryder. Don't be afraid, be stronger, divide and conquer. Come out swinging like Ozfest concerts. Time's up, I'm calling you to rise up. No more walking blind with your eyes shut. Find a message hidden in these chapters, like Black Sabbath records playing backwards. Move out the way when I'm passing through. I got heads to the front and the back of you. I got the world in my hands, you can have it too.
I got two middle fingers and they point it at you.
Move out the way when I'm passing through.
I got
heads to the front and the back of you.
I got
the world in my hands, you can have it too.
I got two middle fingers and they point it at you.
It's a violent game, a cross between Grand Theft Auto and Max Payne. Of the magic in the hands of David Blaine, turning back time to the days when rock and rain. Along came a spider, spinning webs of hatred. Welcome to the wonderful world of entertainment, where stars are born and celebrities tell lies. The revolution will now be televised.
Move out the way when I'm passing through.
I got
heads to the front and the back of you.
I got
the world in my hands, you can have it too.
I got two middle fingers and they point it at you.
The way when I'm passing through,
I got
heads to the front and the back of you.
I got
the world in my hands, you can have it too.
I got two middle fingers and they point it at you.
Yo, what you think? It's dead to level.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever!
As the war between light and darkness continues, heroes and villains become harder to identify. Kindred spirits separated at birth, fighting for their place in time to be solidified. The clock ticks faster and faster while time runs the marathon in this Babylon. But see, the end is only the beginning of the calm before the storm.
It just released a chilling new propaganda video where a militant talking in English shows a makeshift jail holding Shia prisoners.
Exclusive footage. You see here, prisoners. This is just some of the hundreds of prisoners that we have. Most of them Shia. Yeah.
The prisoners are believed to have been captured during the militants' invasion of Mosul on June 10th. The video cuts to the exterior of a building being blown up. As you see there, according to the militants, prisoners were inside. Those claims cannot be verified. Our Nema Albagir joins us now live from Baghdad. So, Nema, highly produced video, very disturbing, but this is, you know, adding to their arsenal, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it has been a very busy day. This first day of the Islamic holy month of Ramadan has been a very busy one for the ISIS propaganda machine. In addition to releasing that video, they also released an audio message, also purporting to be from ISIS, this time announcing a name change, Frederica. They say they will now only go by the Islamic State, by IS, because they are now a caliphate. They are now claiming to be a state that in and of itself stretches through the north of Syria to the east of Iraq. And what makes this propaganda so powerful, Frederica, is of course there is some truth in it. They do hold territory across that pretty large swathe of geography there, stretching between the two countries. But as you said, the Iraqi military looking to have the upper hand in the air, at least. They've had the first contingent of Russian fighter jets come into the country, and they're trying to ramp up their airstrikes on ISIS, and they need to. We've had two strikes in as many days by ISIS to the south of Baghdad on an armed forces base and continuing back and forth over the crucial city of Tikrit, which of course is on the highway to Baghdad. And if Tikrit falls, it would bring the militants even closer to the capital, to the Iraqi capital there, Frederica.
And then lots of conflicting reports about what is happening exactly in Tikrit, Saddam Hussein's hometown. What more can you tell us about that?
Well, we have had claim and counterclaim. The Iraqi state TV has stated a number of times that Tikrit is fully in government hands, but we've seen video recorded and distributed online that shows a pretty empty looking neighborhood. We've also spoken to one resident who says at least in her neighborhood there is no government presence. And the issue with Tikrit is if Tikrit falls, then not only do you have that highly strategic Baiji oil field to the north of Tikrit, but again, you are even closer to Baghdad, and that is the final goal, to even just put pressure on Baghdad and to be seen to be closing in on the capital would be a huge propaganda claim gain for the militants, let alone to get within fighting range of the Iraqi capital.
As the mask of deception falls off the face of humanity, unveiling the grim reality of duality, in which everyone is a casualty. No one will be exempt. Truth has many shades. It's not a matter of black and white, but gray. Although many, we are one. So in the final analysis, could it be we're fighting a war that can't be won?
ISIS fighters who have captured much of Iraq today declared an Islamic State in the territory they now control.
Tonight, the Iraqi army, with U.S. guidance, is struggling to win back some of that land. ABC's Daria Albinger has that story.
Iraqi military video showed a Russian cargo jet with the first delivery of 12 warplanes the Iraqi government has bought secondhand from Moscow. The ground attack fighter jets are the latest effort by the Iraqi government to turn the tide of battle against Islamist Sunni invaders from Syria who have overrun much of their country. The planes will be used to support ground troops such as these. Iraqi state TV showed the counterattacking in an effort to retake the town of Tikrit. This soldier fires an automatic weapon at a fuel tanker, igniting its contents. There are conflicting reports about which side has the upper hand in the battle. Iraqi security officials say they are coordinating the campaign with the United States. And the U.S. is now flying armed drone aircraft over Baghdad. Meanwhile, there is a spike in fears that the violence in Iraq could overflow onto American soil.
Our homeland is at risk.
Radicals in Syria, some with European and U.S. passports, could get on commercial flights carrying a new generation of non-metallic explosives disguised as innocent, everyday carry-ons, toothpaste, clothing, cosmetics, designed to be smuggled past airport security.
There's also at least 100 plus Americans who are over there in Syria right now. So any of these people can go back to the United States and they can carry out the type of attack that they're being trained in.
Giving Homeland Security officials plenty to lose sleep over as the July 4th holiday approaches.
And hold the phones, weasel pot pie. Fill it all in with butterfly bones, weasel pot pie. Scribble on days and dribble on drones, weasel pot pie. And pick your teeth with the butterfly bones.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki warned today that the offensive by Sunni rebels in Iraq and Syria is a threat to the entire Middle East. His comments come as Secretary of State John Kerry met with Kurdish leaders in Washington. Mike Vaccaro joins us live now from the White House. And Mike, what would it take for the Obama administration to send the airstrikes Iraq's government has been asking for now?
Well, Tony, it's become more and more clear in passing weeks and even in the passing last few days that the Obama administration is loath to come forward with airstrikes to get the U.S. military directly involved if there is no resolution in Baghdad among the Iraqis there in the government. Nouri al-Maliki, of course, there was the election in April. They met yesterday, dissolved in acrimony. They're trying to form a government. Now it's clear the U.S. government is loath to get involved unless, of course, they can pull a rabbit out of their hat.
Jong-un has guided the test launches of tactical ballistic rockets aimed at US and South Korean forces. It's the second such launch drill reported in state media in 3 days. Officials say the North launched 2 short-range missiles on Sunday into waters off its east coast and that they were suspected to be Scud-type ballistic missiles. South Korea's defense ministry reported they flew around 310 miles. Meanwhile, North Korea is to put 2 detained American men on trial for committing hostile acts against the country. According to KCNA, the country's state news agency, investigations into Jeffrey Edward Fowle and Matthew Todd Miller have confirmed suspicions that they planned hostile acts during their visits. Details of their alleged crimes have not been revealed, and it's not yet known when they will face court.
Once again, with your finger in the weasel pie. Oh, why did you go and stick your finger in the weasel pie? Keep it in lush with socks and lows, weasel pie pie. With riches and peaches and cinnamon scones, weasel pie.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're enjoying your 4th of July weekend. I want to begin today by saying a special word to the U.S. men's soccer team, who represented America so well the past few weeks. We are so proud of you. You've got a lot of new believers. And I know there's actually a petition on the White House website to make Tim Howard the next Secretary of Defense. Chuck Hagel's got that spot right now, but if there is a vacancy, I promise to think about it. It was 238 years ago that our founders came together in Philadelphia to launch our American experiment. There were farmers and businessmen, doctors and lawyers, ministers, and a kite-flying scientist. Those early patriots may have come from different backgrounds and different walks of life, but they were united by a belief in a simple truth, that we are all created equal, that we are all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Over the years, that belief has sustained us through war and depression, peace and prosperity. It's helped us build the strongest democracy, the greatest middle class, and the most powerful military the world has ever known. And today, there isn't a nation on earth that wouldn't gladly trade places with the United States of America. But our success is only possible because we've never treated those self-evident truths as self-executing. Generations of Americans have marched, organized, petitioned, fought, and even died to extend those rights to others, to widen the circle of opportunity for others, and to perfect this union we love so much. That's why I want to say a special thanks to the men and women of our armed forces and the families who serve with them, especially those service members who spent this most American of holidays serving your country far from home. You keep us safe, and you keep the United States of America a shining beacon of hope for the world. And for that, you and your families deserve not only the appreciation of a grateful nation, but our enduring commitment to serve you as well as you've served us. God bless you all, and have a great weekend.
Guards who worked for Blackwater are finally facing trial in federal court in Washington, D.C. for a deadly shootout in the streets of Baghdad back in September 2007. Blackwater said their convoy came under attack, but witnesses said the guards fired first without provocation.
I remember people strewn on the streets, children, elderly men. This is what I saw with my own eyes. The street turned into the street of the dead.
Prosecutors say 14 Iraqi civilians were killed that day at Nisour Square, including a 9-year-old boy. And now a bombshell revelation by the New York Times this week. The top Blackwater employee in Baghdad allegedly threatened the life of the State Department investigator looking into the group's activities just weeks before the shooting. The State Department memo revealed by the Times accused a Blackwater manager of allegedly telling the investigator who was looking into the work Blackwater did that, quote, he could kill me and no one could or would do anything about it while we were in Iraq. He was reportedly stunned when officials at the embassy in Iraq allegedly sided with Blackwater and told him to leave the country. Blackwater had a $1 billion government contract to protect American diplomats. The State Department investigator, Gene Richter, could not be reached for comment when CNN reached out to him. But his investigation of Blackwater concluded that the company had insufficient oversight and created an environment full of liability and negligence. The State Department this week was asked if the investigator's review was canceled because of the alleged threats made to him.
As I understand, there were steps taken at the time, given threats that were people faced, but I don't have any additional information.
Solemnly swear.
In 2007, congressional hearings were held on possible misconduct by Blackwater, and then owner Eric Prince was vilified by Congress.
I believe we acted appropriately at all times.
Blackwater appears to have fostered a culture of shoot first and sometimes kill, and then ask the questions.
Prince sold the company in 2010 for $200 million. Blackwater has since undergone two name changes, including a merger. But the trial and this newly revealed memo bring up new questions.
Blackwater officials are facing the U.S. justice system. That same can't be said for State Department officials, some of whom who failed to see the red flags of all of this negligent behavior taken on by the contractor that could have alerted us that these guys needed to be fired.
That State Department memo threatening an investigator came out just days before the slaughter in Nisour Square.
The trial of these four former Blackwater guards is expected to last months. Federal prosecutors say the guards murdered the Iraqi civilians without provocation. The defense attorneys have claimed in court that witnesses fabricated their stories. Prior to this trial, in 2009, a judge threw out an indictment against the guards.
This is the direction the world is going in at the present time. In our world, there will be no emotions except fear, rage, triumph, and self-abasement. There will be no loyalty except loyalty to the party. But always, there will be the intoxication of power. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
Graham Hancock put this on his Twitter today, and I retweeted it. Magic potion discovered with potential to end all wars.
The drug was administered in a drink of water given at the start of each day's exercise. 25 minutes later, the first effects of the drug became apparent. The men began to relax and to giggle. But this man was more seriously affected and had to be removed from the exercise. After 35 minutes, one of the radio operators had become incapable of using his set, and the efficiency of the rocket launcher team was also very impaired. 10 minutes later, the attacking section had lost all sense of urgency. Notice the bunching and indecision as they enter a wood occupied by the enemy. Almost immediately, the section commander tried to use a map to find the location of troop headquarters, and a prisoner's escort had to have the way pointed out to him, although it was in plain sight, 700 yards away over open country. 50 minutes after taking the drug, radio communication had become difficult, if not impossible, but the men are still capable of sustained physical effort. However, constructive action was still attempted by those retaining a sense of responsibility, in spite of physical symptoms. But 1 hour and 10 minutes after taking the drug, with one man climbing a tree to feed the birds, the troop commander gave up, admitting that he could no longer control himself or his men. He himself then relapsed into laughter.
And you thought those ever-changing newsfeed layouts and the questionable privacy settings were the worst of Facebook's crimes? Uh-uh. Now we're learning about a pretty creepy experiment. So let's say you're in a good mood, you pop open Facebook, you cruise your newsfeed, and your mood darkens. Well, you could have been one of Facebook's guinea pigs. As it turned out, Facebook has been allowing researchers, both inside and outside the company, to manipulate users' news feeds to hide either the good news, like newborn baby pictures, or bad news, like animal cruelty videos, just to see whether it affected the emotions of the users themselves. Huh. Lent Ulanoff, chief correspondent and editor-at-large at Mashable, joins me, as does Laurie Siegel, CNN Money tech correspondent. Lori, let me just bring you in first here before we start judging and rolling our eyes and getting frustrated at this whole notion of that they're doing this. What do we know about the experiment itself?
Well, first of all, Brooke, the premise was pretty interesting. The idea that there's this whole theory that you look on Facebook and you see everyone putting their best foot forward, they're living these amazing lives, and you get a little bit depressed. So Facebook data scientists said, hey, let's do an experiment and let's see if this is actually the case. Well, they found that if you surface negative content in a user's newsfeed, they would actually start posting negatively, which is very interesting. And then you take this enormous step back and you say, hey, wait a second. Facebook, we know that they collect data on us, but they actually manipulated our emotions, and that's where we call into the question of ethics, and why I think people are really
record scratch on that.
Absolutely.
why didn't Facebook, I mean, I presume this would ruin the experiment, but why didn't they at least say, heads up, we're about to manipulate your emotions for research?
Well, one, they don't have to. You know, you sign that terms of service agreement, and it says they can use your data for research. And two, it might have sort of freaked everyone out. They used about over 600,000 randomly selected Facebook users, and then obviously surfaced or manipulated their newsfeed. I think, you know, people's newsfeeds always seem so erratic and changeable anyway. I'm not sure people would have noticed. But right now, it's not part of Facebook's policy to ask first. They tend to do and then ask later.
Because we click and we say yes and whatever because we just want to hop on Facebook and nobody actually pays attention, or perhaps not enough of us pay attention to the fine print when we're logging on. What is Facebook, Lori? What are they now saying? Because I know that it was pretty quiet, the story initially, and it only started to percolate a week later.
Sure. I reached out for comment. Let me read you what they said. They said, we do research to improve our services to make the content people see on Facebook as relevant and engaging as possible. A big part of this is understanding how people respond to different types of content. We carefully consider what research we do and have a strong internal review process. Now, that being said, Brooke, the data scientist who was behind this went on Facebook and has been commenting, and he said he's sad that he upset users. And he did say that the internal review process is much better than it was a couple years ago. And I think Lance is very, very much correct when Facebook has oftentimes asked for forgiveness and not permission. And that seems to be what we're seeing there. But it is completely legal for them to do that, which you should know.
It makes me wonder what else Facebook, what else Facebook might be up to, Lance. I hear you. What else could they be up to that we don't know about?
I don't know why people are surprised here. I mean, look, you know, you're putting stuff on Facebook. You know, the minute you do that, the minute you start sharing, just sort of throw up your hands and assume that, one, probably a lot more people than you expect can see your stuff, and two, Facebook is doing stuff with data. I want to be fair to Facebook, though, because, you know, what they said in the study and the way it worked was they were not reading posts, per se. They were not reading the full post. They were actually looking for sentiment-based words. They were looking for positive words and negative words, both for the kinds of posts they would elevate and then really reading how you were responding. You know, so if a room full of sad posts, they weren't reading your whole sad post. They were reading kind of the sentiment of it. So, you know, it's not quite as creepy as we think.
Creepy-ish.
Party time. Party time.
Warning for parents about a Facebook page where teenagers are able to buy drugs and alcohol.
This is legit. Police are investigating it as well, and they're warning you to be vigilant about your child's internet use and how easy it may be for kids to get access. Dana Rebick talked with some concerned moms today. Dana, this is crazy.
It is, Marnie, and this was actually the first I had heard of this site, but the Facebook page does exist. One of them we're talking about is right here. It's a closed group, so you have to join and be accepted as a member, but we were able to get access today and take a look at the illegal activity happening inside.
Now, what's that?
They admit they're nosy, but Lisa and Megan like to keep tabs on what their kids are doing online.
What's going on tonight? School's out.
Sounds innocent enough, but recently they got a tip from another mom about this disturbing group on Facebook.
Who need Vikes?
Yeah, Vicodin.
It's called Hella Whack Nights, an online marketplace where adults are openly selling drugs and alcohol to teens.
Facebook is the dealer's best friend. You don't have to worry about having a drug house and worrying about somebody coming in and busting you. You can do it from the comfort of your car or hide behind your computer screen and do it at a Starbucks.
We browsed the Hella Whack Nights page and found posts like this. Kush for Molly, looking for pain pills, and trying to get rid of some vodka.
Why would you sell vodka online when you can get it at the grocery store, unless you're selling to a minor?
Police say they are aware of the site and investigating, and told us there are similar Facebook bartering pages set up in places like Linwood and Everett. On the Everett Real Buying and Selling Facebook page, we saw people wanting to trade drug paraphernalia for pot, and a person asking to swap fireworks for weed.
As a parent of two teenagers, just look at your kid's Facebook page just to begin with.
These moms want other parents to be aware and have a conversation with their kids.
There is a sterilization, perhaps, that they take via viewing it on Facebook, and maybe even more of an innocence of thinking, I won't get caught in this. They need to realize it is illegal. They need to realize that there are people who are aware. They need to realize that awareness is growing, and there are people who are not going to put up with it.
Now, on the buying and selling page, we also saw what appeared to be a lot of stolen property, electronics, an iPhone like this one, for example. People saying in these titles of these posts that they needed to get rid of these items fast. Now, the moms we talked with also believe Facebook has some responsibility to shut these pages down. We did contact their media office today and are still waiting for a response back.
Party time.
Hey! The pot to time,
Oh, wow. First thing, I just want to say I'm so excited for this opportunity. I've loved McDonald's my entire life. I remember when I was a kid, my parents would...
That's great. We're just doing this for legal reasons, so let's just get this over with.
Mmm, yummy, it's McDonald's Chicken McNuggets. All white meat, boneless, factory farm chicken treated with vaccines and hormones.
Cut, just read the ingredients. Don't tell them about the factory farm stuff.
Mmm, yummy, it's McDonald's Chicken McNuggets. Chicken, water and salt, enriched flour, yellow corn flour, bleached wheat flour, baking soda, corn starch, wheat starch, modified food starch, dextrose, riboflavin, folic acid, spices, and thiamine mononitrate, which can lead to severe liver damage.
Hot!
Niacin, citric acid, reduced iron, calcium lactate, sodium phosphate, sodium acid pyrophosphate, sodium aluminum phosphate, monocalcium phosphate, all of which are linked to chronic kidney disease, weak bones, and premature death.
Cut!
Why don't you guys just make it out of chicken?
Cut!
Autolyzed yeast extract, which is basically MSG, natural flavoring, which can mean anything, safflower oil, vegetable oil, and hydrogenated soybean oil with TBHQ, a chemical preservative, which is a form of butane and is linked to stomach tumors. And finally, dimethyl polysiloxin, which is a silicone that's used in cosmetics and breast implants and silly putty and to treat head lice. Mmm, yummy. McDonald's, eat like a champion.
Okay, now take a bite of the McNugget.
Buying a burger might start taking a bite out of your wallet. Meat prices skyrocketed this week after the place that makes the meat revealed that the cow smashing machine is all beefed up.
This machine has beef way up in it. The basher, the meat collector, even the main meat hall, all of it. Lousy with beef.
The cow smashing machine is an integral part of the meat making process, taking whole big cows into one end, with all different meats falling out the other. Supermarket chains warn that unless we start smashing cows again soon, we could face a serious beef shortage.
We're out of beef. All we got left is hot dogs. Hot dogs is beef, but it's not as good.
We're out of beef until we get the machine de-beefed.
The beef industry is working hard to unclog the cow smasher, but says it could take several days or even weeks to scoop all the beef that's crammed up in there. If they can't fix the cow smasher soon, dairy farmers offer to try smashing the cows with the milking machine. Usually the milking machine just picks up cows and shakes the milk out, but they might try to reprogram it to crunch the cows too. Until it's fixed, meat-hungry Americans can take solace in the fact that the chicken grinder is working at full capacity, just completely tearing up all those chickens, and the pig machine is porking out hardcore. Up next, bluesmen find a rising trend of their babies done leaving on that there old devil train.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Potato peelings in the sink did not turn into vodka as I had hoped. I only start to need a drink after the liquor stores have closed. You left a bunch of dirty Kleenex underneath the mattress like an unwanted batch of kittens. Everybody's got secrets and I'm forgotten, but I don't mistake it for forgiving. I heard you change your name again, but don't you change your hair. It was the only thing I liked about you in the end. La la la. Oh, A woman on crutches buying a pregnancy test at Safeway. The woman at the laundromat can't meet my eyes. Girls at the bus stop, the stripper downstairs know some of the girls in some of the movies that I watch sometimes. A woman calling on the telephone, losing patience. Her voice sounds like whiskey and milk. No, I can't pay the bill, but please call back. I got to know that you're alright. I heard you changed your name again. Darling, don't you change your hair. It was the only thing I liked about you in the end. La la la, I heard you changed your name again. Darling, don't you change your hair. It was the only thing I liked about you in the end. La la la.
Now, go find the others.com.
Don't blow it. Keep it simple. Count your money.